This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello and thank you for downloading another movie podcast from 5 Live. Now, normally you'd be getting a dose of The Good Doctor in here, but Mark has been struck down by the much feared swine flu. He'll still be downloading this for sure. Hello, Mark. So in Dr. Kermode's place, you're getting two for the price of one. Time Out film critic Nigel Floyd and Heat Magazine's reviews editor Boyd Hilton review Up in 3D, Zombieland, Love Happens, and whatever else is around. So it's Floyd and Boyd, or Boyd and Floyd, you decide. First, we interviewed director of Clerks, Kevin Smith, about his new book and podcast, and I began by telling him about Mark's swine flu.
Get out of here, H1N1?
Yeah. Yes, he has the H1.
How rare is that, that you ever know somebody with swine flu?
Well, apparently there's a 7-day incubation period, and I met him just about 4 days ago, so I'm counting down the days just to make sure I'm all clear.
Check you out. That's why I'm in the radio car, far, far from you.
It's a very wise thing. Boyd, how are you?
I'm very well. Very excited to be on the radio with Kevin Smith.
Why is that?
Well, I'm a huge fan.
I know Boyd. Yeah, I know Boyd from his days back in Heat.
Thank
Heat
you.
Magazine.
I'm still there. Still there, Kevin.
Are you still there?
Yeah, absolutely.
He hasn't progressed in years,
no,
Kevin.
You've progressed to multi-million dollar films and directing Bruce Willis. I'm still at Heat. But I am on the radio reviewing films as well.
But to be fair, though, Boyd, the films haven't changed. It's the same movie
and over and over again.
Same movie,
exactly. So, well, I want you to say, how ahead of the time you were. I mean, Judd Apatow is now making films for multi-millions of pounds, starring huge stars, basically the kind of films you were making for no money years and years ago.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for reminding me how successful he's been at it. Jeez.
Yeah,
when I started, there was a void. There was nothing. There was no movie directed at me. No movie that kind of I could identify with. No movie character. No lead that I saw myself represented in. When I started doing it with Clerks, other people start seeing it. You know, film is very influential and very incestuous. I saw Richard Linklater's Slacker. It made me want to be a filmmaker. I put Clerks out there. Other people go, oh, my Lord, you're allowed to talk about this stuff now? Like, this counts as a movie? This counts as movie dialogue? And basically, you just need somebody to go before you and kind of open the door just a little bit and show you the possibility. Quentin did it with Reservoir Dogs. In that opening scene, he's sitting around talking about Like a Virgin. Everyone's dissecting it. Grown men dissecting, a little pop ditty. And I remember sitting there watching it going, this counts? Like, this is allowed now as movie dialogue? Oh, my Lord. So when I started writing Clerks, I was like, I'm going to write about, I don't know, Star Wars and hockey and chicks and all the stuff, and tawdry sex, everything that me and my friends talk about. And it was because of people who kind of went before. And then now people saw what we did with Clerks and Mara Chasing Amy, and they're like, oh, you could do that? Like Edgar Wright was telling me that him and Simon were at a screening of Chasing Amy out here just outside of London years and years ago, and Simon actually stood up and asked me a question. And I was like, please tell me I was kind to him. But they, they said after that screening that they had the same feeling. They're like, this counts now? You could talk about comic books and whatnot? And that's where, it gave them the kind of it didn't inspire them to make space, but they were very much like, well, if this counts, then we could do the same thing in our world.
You
as
were
well.
Also doing bromances. That's the key, I think, key thing. You know, these nowadays bromance films that you get about 10 a year, and Chasing Amy, all of your films have this very, very, some would say homoerotic relationship between two guys chewing the fat, talking about stuff, talking about comics, talking about Star Wars, and that is what you get, particularly in the Judd Apatow movies and all kinds of other movies these days as well, that I think you're incredibly ahead of your time with as well.
Thank you, sir. And some would call it homoerotic, but I just flat out call it homosexual.
Yeah,
those dudes
sure.
in my movies, they want to have sex with each other. And that's what happens after the credits roll, generally.
Kevin, we've been reviewing the Jennifer Aniston film without seeing it. This has been...
Which one's this?
Well, this is the new one. I forgot what it's called.
Does she meet a guy and
love
have
happens.
Some romantic
love,
troubles?
It's Love Happens, but because our film reviewer, Mark, has swine flu, it means that Boyd hasn't seen it. We're kind of catching up here. So we're asking people to send in emails reviewing the film, even though they haven't seen it. And Richard Kluwer in Salisbury says, Simon, I think your last review was probably too detailed to do the film justice. I suspect that a review should go, love starts to happen, starts to stop happening, and probably happens in the end, but you never find out and couldn't really care because by then you've left the cinema or fallen asleep. Are you a fan of Jennifer Aniston films, Kevin?
I didn't know that it was a genre. The way you guys are describing it, there are lots, and I didn't know there were that many. She always seems to be kind of, playing second role or second lead in somebody else's movie. I didn't know there was a whole sub Aniston genre.
Yeah, Stuart in Air. Aniston plays in this film plays a kooky alien living quietly in a crater on the moon after a Martian boyfriend was flattened by a spaceship which crashed on him when they lived on Mars. Suddenly, a NASA probe smashes into her crater, narrowly missing her. She moves to Houston to exact revenge on the NASA director. After several adventures, they fall in love and marry, but both commit suicide after an unfortunate event befalls their dog Marley. Originally titled I'm Just Not Into Your Crater, but retitled The Kook That Fell to Earth. Hope Mark is recovering from his swine flu. We are talking movies. Mark has swine flu, but is contributing via email, as I imagined he probably would. We have Boyd is here. Nigel Floyd is going to be with us as well. We have another 5 minutes of Kevin Smith, who has a new book out. Kevin Smith, of course, now New York Times bestseller. Because that's what it says on the front. And this, Kevin, is like transcribed best of your podcast. You call it a smodcast, but that's essentially what this is, yes?
Yeah, it's it was Titan, the UK publishers, who were the publishers of the last book I did, my boring, I don't know if you could say ASS, Life, which was basically a compilation of my online blog. Once that sold really well enough to become a New York Times bestseller, Adam, who was over at Titan, said, hey, man, your podcast, can we transcribe that and turn it into a book? And I was like, oh, God, Adam, people are going to think I'm just the biggest money-grubbing whore on the planet. But he said, it reads pretty well. I had it transcribed. And he sent me a section, and I read it, and it actually made me chuckle. And what it was a transcribed version of the podcast that I do with my friend Scott Mosier, and where we sit around and talk about things like we're both on the Oceanic airliner that goes down, you know, in the sea, and we wind up on the island of Lost, and there's nobody there. It's just me and you, maybe the polar bear, maybe the smoke cloud. How long, Scott, before we start having sex with one another? And then we'll talk about that for like 20 minutes. And so Adam thought it was good enough to be within the confines of a book. They transcribed it, turned it into a book. Sadly, I had almost nothing to do with it. I mean, I recorded the podcast and whatnot, but I didn't transcribe it. Two people did who I've never met. They're truly the writers of this book. I didn't come up with the title. Good old Adam did. The title is, I can't say it on the radio.
You can't indeed,
Can?
No, you can't. No, absolutely you can't.
You can. No. I was like, wow, is it given permission?
No.
No, but what I do is, what I do instead is I swap out my last name for as a euphemism for human waste, and on the radio we call it Shooting the Smith with Kevin Smith. It's I'm barely an author. I'm a backdoor author at best, which sounds like I write a lot of gay erotica, but it just means that I didn't intend to write this book. It just kind of happened around me. But it's very funny. And even people that don't like me seem to think the book's funny.
And how did you get into the whole area of podcasting? Because you Twitter a lot, and I think you only have about 360,000 followers or something, he adds jealously. But, I mean, that's been fantastically successful.
I had 360,000 about 6 months ago. I'm up to almost 1.4 million now.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, man. That's me. I got an army, dude. I got an army. I'm just figuring out what area of the world I want to conquer, and then I'm going to move my Twitter army there, and we're going to take it.
But just explain how you got involved in that whole area of podcasting, which has been, you know, liberating and fantastically popular in all parts and some surprising parts of the industry. Just explain how it started, Kevin.
For me, I'd heard about podcasting and I understood it was just basically a homegrown radio show. And I've always, more so than wanting to do what I do for a day job, I would rather do what you do, Simon. I love talking, obviously. So the idea of having your own radio show where you could do whatever you wanted, say whatever you want, nobody would constrict you, you didn't have to deal with any, fines or regulations, and you're free to say whatever you want, do it at your schedule. I mean, it's built, custom made for lazy asses like myself, people who can't commit to a job or commit to a time or a schedule of some sort. We just do it when we want, and we sit around and talk about whatever we'd like. And, you know, you put it out there in the ether and see if anybody likes it, and they have. And it's been awesome to do because I kind of get to express myself in ways that I used to only be able to do in the films. And now I could do it on a more frequent basis and with more instant gratification because you put it up an hour later. You find out what the audience thinks of it. So oddly enough, as the smut is kind of flowing over in Smodcast, it's kind of leaving the film work I do to some degree. Like I'm suddenly not interested in making the romantic comedies or the sex comedies or the fart joke movies. Now I'm far more interested in like becoming a real movie maker, like making movies for a little while. And that's what I did this summer. I did this movie with Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan called A Couple of Dicks. And that stands for Detectives, Cops, D-I-C-S, like Jane Tennyson, Detective in Charge kind of thing.
Thanks for the clarification. Kevin, good to have you on the program. Appreciate that. I understand people are now going to drag you off somewhere else, but appreciate your time with us today.
It's so nice to have me. Unfortunately, I'm shooting a part in Noel Clark's movie. I'm actually in a British film today, gentlemen. So I'm going to go back and act or pretend to act. I can't really act. I just put on a different outfit and sound like me.
Kevin, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
That's Kevin Smith. So, we have some movies to discuss. Boyd Hilton is here. Hello, Boyd.
Hello, Simon.
Nigel Floyd is here. Hello, Nigel.
Hello, Simon.
It's Boyd and Floyd. Should that be Floyd and Boyd?
Well, we'll argue about that after.
We're just going to do a sort of a shambolic conversation around movies and some emails. Also, I should say that Barack Obama, who, as you'll have heard on the news, is now the Nobel Peace Prize winner. To the surprise of many, he's going to be making a statement outside the White House, around about 3:30, we'll bring you that. We're also reviewing the Jennifer Aniston film Without Seeing It. And this is quite good. This is from Graham.
Nigel has just seen it, haven't you?
I have just seen it.
Don't spoil Don't spoil the fun. Well, we'll end up there.
Especially saw it.
You keep quiet about it, Nigel, just for a moment. Jennifer plays a film reviewer. Unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond her control, she fails to see any of the films. So she phones in with a bit of a cold and claims to have swine flu. Luckily, the book reviewer steps in and is really good. We'll have to wait for the sequel to find out if the book reviewer gets the job.
Played by Aaron Eckhart.
The Jennifer Aniston film, this is Liam in London, reads like a Richard Curtis title, but plays like a Jennifer Aniston movie.
Very good.
It's mayo@bbc.co.uk. It's 85058. So what? This is the email from Dr. Kermode.
Here we go.
Okay. This will be the first of many.
Okay. Be gentle. Can I just say, be gentle with us? You know,
do you think
we're trying our best?
No, it's more about Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. He hasn't started criticising us. Well, Nigel's just arrived.
No, he wouldn't, because he's a respectful kind of chap. Dear all, it begins. Since neither Boyd nor Floyd saw the Jennifer Aniston movie, which we understand has been corrected, but we won't go into that.
Sorry.
Let's not let the facts get in the way of a good story. I saw it last week. James King and I stayed to the bitter end, whilst other souls from Five Live bailed out early. It was ghastly. Worse, in fact, than swine flu, and I should know. That is all.
Perfect.
So, we will... it remains to be seen whether that impression is corrected as we move through the afternoon. If you have seen the Jennifer Aniston film, and it may well be that you have, it's mayo@bbc.co.uk, 85058. Got lots of emails about bits and pieces. So what we'll do is we'll do the... we'll do Zombieland, we'll do Up, we're going to try and do a bit of Love Happens. The Duncan Scorsese, we've talked about. We'll see where we go with these reviews. We'll do the box office top 10. Have we got everything in the 10 covered, gentlemen?
I think so, yeah.
Between us, I think we can do it.
Okay. Number 10, Aliens in the Attic.
A thoroughly ordinary children's film that didn't know whether it was aimed at children or adults or someone in between, and hit none of those audiences at all, missed by a mile. And yet, remarkably, after 7 weeks, has made £6.5 million and is at number 10.
Back in the top 10 as well. Went out the top 10 and then came back in the top 10, which never happens.
The Soloist is at number 9, and this email from Armin in Stuttgart... in Germany, who, he adds, or possibly she, graduating in English literature and biology, as well as a former captain of airborne combat engineers and special forces in Afghanistan veteran. So we'll take you at your word here. He says, I was astonished that besides all the That Is Acting for awards, which the good doctor did not bring up, this is about what Mark was saying a couple of weeks back, didn't mention anything about the casting of Jamie Foxx in this film. With my military background, which we take as read, I do buy Meg Ryan being a rescue chopper pilot. After all, there are men who fly helicopters that look less like a pilot than Meg Ryan. But every time Jamie Foxx gave us his hurt puppy look, I just felt betrayed. Every homeless person in the movie was well cast, but Jamie, I'm the tough drill sergeant in Jarhead and I'm the cop in Miami Vice, Fox, is just too charismatic and has too much of a physical presence, even in rags and bad makeup, to impersonate a schizophrenic bum who's lived on the streets for years. Comments, please, on The Soloist. Boyd Hilton first.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I thought he was miscast, actually. Dr. K mentioned last week, it's directed by Joe Wright, who did Atonement, and Dr. K mentioned how he's not convinced yet that Joe Wright is any great directorial talent. I have to agree. I think this is slightly tedious, very worthy Oscar bait with the odd good scene.
Yes, Joe Wright, Pride and Prejudice. I didn't even get through it. I couldn't get to the end of it. Atonement? No. Stop. Do not do any more.
Number 80 is 500 Days of Summer. Nigel goes first.
Completely rewrote, apparently, the romantic comedy. It did not. It's the same old bromance nonsense, the same old sort of manic indie pixie girl stuff with Zooey Deschanel wafting about all over the place. It's tedious and overrated, and I cannot understand how people were fooled by it.
Boyd. I enjoyed it. Any film that is predicated on the two main characters meeting over their love of the Smiths gets my vote.
Now, number 7 is Pandorum. Ted on this email... this is Ted Blades in Newfoundland, BAA, Bachelor of Applied Arts, and CPL Certified Podcast Listener. Dear E and Coli, see, that was almost appropriate and almost prophetic. If Pandora was a noun and not the first woman, according to the Greeks anyway, then following on the bacteria bacterium rule, Pandora would be the plural and Pandorum would be the singular, as in Kermode and Kermodium. Anyway, just thought we'd explain that.
Very good.
I hope that helps.
That does help. Much too much time spent discussing a very average film. Go and rent Event Horizon instead, which is much better.
That is very true, although this was, in fact, pretty much the same film again. The thing about Pandorum was two people woke up from hypersleep and thought to begin with that they were in a remake of Alien, because it all seemed like Alien, and then suddenly they found that they were in The Descent on a spaceship, which seemed very curious.
District 9 is at number 6. Dear, who's this from? This is Dr. Cat Street, BSc, PGCE. Listen to the show every week without fail on the podcast. I'm always a few days behind, though. Further to the correspondent this Friday, who wondered why the agency in District 9 didn't just use a captured prawn to fire the weapons. The film was likewise marred for me by a couple of things. One, why would aliens be subjected to human laws anyway? Their Skrulls were meaningless. Why were MNU bothering in the first place? Two, why didn't they sedate... Vickers? And three, why didn't MNU change the security codes? Sorry, but the last one really bothered me. Surely someone would be seriously for the high jump after that. Let's do District 9. Boyd.
It is one of those films where if you really sit back and study it, there are loads and loads of holes in it, but it doesn't detract too much from the fact that it's really, really enjoyable. It's a huge amalgam of lots of different films, but brilliantly done.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think while it's going on and there's plenty of special effects on the screen and you're caught up in the story, it's fine. When you're sitting in the pub afterwards, there are a lot of those questions about, hang on a minute, I know they needed to have an allegory about racism and political control, but they could have thought a bit more about the plot.
Surrogates is at number 5.
Oh dear, this is another one which is so much like about 10 other different films in which there are avatars of humans. You do get to see Bruce Willis in a brilliant blonde wig.
I didn't see Surrogates. I was denied the opportunity to do so.
Cloudy with a... by who?
By the company what didn't screen it.
Right. Yeah, I pay good money to see it. How about that?
That's the point. Insanity. You're going to have to pay money, Nigel.
Don't. Please don't pay money to see it. It's not worth it.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is at number 4. Dr. Luke Bishop and Dr. Anna Hepworth say, not being as fine connoisseurs of cinema as yourselves, neither of us have seen Eraserhead, so are unable to comment on this film's apparent Lynch-like qualities. But what we can say is that it is a comedic feast, a thrilling disaster movie for people of all ages, and unlike the recent glut of computer-generated non-entities, Monsters versus Aliens, anyone, says Dr. Luke and Dr. Anna, though I quite enjoyed it, a film that has proper character development and touches on important themes such as identity, equality, and fittingly, desire and greed. It was also able to laugh at itself, a film made by a lot of people, funny, and on a serious note, what a wonderfully inclusive approach to filmmaking. One of the best films, say Doctors Bishop and Hepworth, of 2009.
I think it's one of the best non-Pixar animated films for years. I think it's weirdly underhyped as well. It almost came out without that much attention, but it's really funny and incredibly enjoyable and looks great.
Nigel? I'm afraid I didn't see that one.
Oh, my
word. Was, I think, screened on a Sunday morning with many, many screaming children, which may be one of the reasons why I haven't seen
it. My 8-year-old nephew loved it.
That's one of the delights.
Yeah.
You have to go and see it with screaming kids, Nigel.
Yes.
Isn't it great, Simon? It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, my 9-year-old said, that's one of the weirdest films I've ever seen, and he's probably right.
Very bit pancakes and maple syrup.
But it is. But it certainly is the kind of film that parents, if they're taking kids on...
Absolutely.
...could just think, no, this is going to be great. This is
absolutely going to be funny and not in that contrived way that Dr. K hates, which is right about putting in references to films and stuff.
Toy Story in 3D is at number 3.
For me, a semi-pointless release because it's fantastic, one of the best, you know, animated films of all time, but it doesn't need to be in 3D.
No, why is the question there? I mean, and the same question will come up with Up, I'm afraid. I mean, it doesn't need to be in 3D. All this nonsense about immersive entertainment and 3D, it's all a lot of old tosh. That's not what you get immersed in. You get immersed in the story and the characters, and with Pixar that always works. They don't need the 3D. It's just sort of gilding the lily.
I've just had a bad thought.
Go on.
A very bad thought. Well, I went to see Fantastic Mr. Fox this week. And I had to sign a disclaimer saying that I wouldn't review it. Have you done that?
I haven't yet seen it. I should see it at the opening of the LFF.
Right, have you seen? Have you signed a disclaimer?
Well, I've signed disclaimers all the time, but not for that film. No.
Not for that film.
I signed a disclaimer for Couples Retreat on Monday. But you're about to try and talk about it.
Well, it's just, it felt like a 3D film, but really? It wasn't. I think I can get away with it.
You can say that, yeah. It's whether you think it's...
But it's one of those... It's like Toy Story. You don't come out and think, oh, what a shame, it's 2D. Mm. You've just seen a... I can't even say whether it's good or bad, can I?
No, definitely can't say that.
Right, Toy Story's at 3. The Invention of Lying, which is the Ricky Gervais film at number 2, boy.
Very interesting. Ricky blogged this week that his last film, Ghost Town, was held off the number 1 spot by High School Musical 3, and his new film has been held off the number 1 spot by the film we're about to mention, and they're both kind of very similar tweeny musical films, so it's slightly irritating for him. I think The Invention of Lying is great for the first half, then I think the last half hour... It loses it and goes downhill. But I've seen it twice, and I have to say, it's much cleverer than I thought it was the first time I saw it. And I'm a huge Ricky fan anyway, so for me, fine. Absolutely fine.
Nigel, did you get to see this?
I didn't get to see this, but the interesting thing about Ricky Gervais is that he is often clever, but he's not always funny. I always think he's incredibly clever, and he's, you know, one of the smartest people around. But sometimes, in being clever, he forgets to kind of make you laugh.
He the second half isn't that funny, and he says that's deliberate. He claims that's deliberate. He didn't want to have a film which is trying to be funny all the way through.
Well, it was also clear when he came on program a couple of weeks back is that he is far more interested in drama now, and that's actually what he wants to do. You know, he knows he can do stand-up, he knows he can do TV, and what he wants to do is drama. What would be interesting to see him in is his first straight role where he's doing an accent or he's not playing.
Well, I don't think he's going to do that. I think he'll direct and write more dramatic, because I think the next one, Cemetery Junction, will be more dramatic, but I don't think he thinks he's good enough to be like a straight dramatic person.
The UK number 1 is Fame. Who's seen Fame?
I had to avoid it in order to see another film that I had to review that same evening, so sadly I was denied.
I've seen it, and Fame is all about who you are. If you're an old person like me, like us, you're going to hate it, because the original actually is really good and a really edgy, interesting film. This has had all the edges smoothed off. It's like a High School Musical, but nowhere near as good. It's totally unmemorable. What film? But 10-year-old girls will love it.
Dean, on this email, Simon saw the trailer for Love Happens at the Cinema. This is the Jennifer Aniston film. If you've seen the trailer, you don't really need to see the film. Though, in Jennifer's defence, she has made some good films. The Breakup, Office Space, and Along Came Polly were all decent movies. He then puts a question mark.
Well, Office Space is great, but not really because of Jennifer Aniston.
Simon Nicol, he of Fairport Convention, saying, Simon, could you pass to Mark my good wishes, please, to the doctor on behalf of the entire orchestra for a speedy recovery from his ailment. And Simon's currently, he says, he's on tour in a surprisingly swine flu-free Denmark. If you're wondering what's happening, we're doing movies with Nigel Floyd and Boyd Hilton. It's Floyd and Boyd, it's Boyd and Floyd, because Mark has swine flu. Up is our first movie. Boyd, take it away.
Up is, as we've mentioned, the new Pixar Disney film. It's their 10th film. It's their first in 3D, though, which, as Nigel has already referred to, we've already touched on the fact that does it need to be in 3D? We can touch on that more. It's a computer animated film about a 78-year-old codger called Carl, played by Ed Asner, Lou Grant, brilliant classic TV series, Lou Grant. So this, again, it shows you how Pixar does not follow the usual line of computer animated films, which get huge stars in for no particular reason. It stars someone who probably most kids would never have heard of. It's about an old guy. It's got a very, very bizarre premise in which this old guy, who's just got over the death of his wife, which the first 5-10 minutes of the film explains in fantastic style, he then decides the various bizarre reasons to take his house using hundreds and hundreds of balloons and to fly it to South America, which is one of the great things he's always wanted to do in his life, to a particular waterfall. And along with, for the ride, comes a little boy who is a kind of like a Cub Scout, and one of his tasks is to help out an old person. So let's hear a clip.
See these? These are my Wilderness Explorer badges. You may notice one is missing. It's my assisting the elderly badge. If I get it, I will become a senior wilderness explorer.
The wilderness must be explored!
Gah, gah!
Rah! It's gonna be great. There's a big ceremony, and all the dads come, and they pin on our badges.
So, you want to assist an old person?
Yep. Then I'll be a senior wilderness explorer.
You ever heard of a snipe?
Snipe?
Bird. Beady eyes. Every night it sneaks in my yard and gobbles my poor azaleas. I'm elderly and infirm. I can't catch it. If only someone could help me.
Me! I'll do it!
Oh, I don't know. It's awfully crafty. You'd have to clap your hands 3 times to lure it in.
I'll find them, Mr. Fredrickson.
I think it's burrows 2 blocks down.
If you 2 blocks down, it. Got it! Snipey.
Bring it back here when you find it.
So that's Jordan Nagy voicing Russell, who's the little kid, and Ed Asner, as I mentioned, voicing Carl, the old guy.
Who looks like Alan Bennett.
He absolutely does look a bit like Alan Bennett, fantastically enough. Is that another thing you don't get normally in Disney, in any computer films, characters who look like Alan Bennett.
No, that's true.
Yeah. So the kid stows away on board the flying house, being flown via hundreds and hundreds of balloons. It then gets even more bizarre than that when they arrive in South America.
It's a weird thing, isn't it? Why do they make it so hard for themselves? The first 10 minutes of this movie, even more so than The Incredibles, I was sitting there thinking, what is any child going to make of this story? Yeah. I mean, basically, you've got 10 minutes of stuff where you see this entire 78-year-old guy's life passing him by. He loves his wife, and they've had a good life. He's a balloon salesman. I guess there's some fun to be had in that. But at the point that when his wife dies, they have not yet gone to this mystical, magical, lost world where this waterfall is. And it's only after she dies, and he's going to be evicted from his house, that he constructs this incredible thing with the hundreds and hundreds of balloons and lifts the house off and then fulfills his dream. When he gets there, it goes completely bonkers. I mean, there's this multicoloured bird running around. There's a disgraced explorer who's got an entire pack of talking mechanical dogs, which actually have the best lines in the movie. And it's quite crackers. And then at the end, it pulls it all back together again. And you come down to the fact that rather than sort of looking out there for this mythical land, this kind of, you know, this great dream, what you've got to do is just enjoy those little moments of life that he shares with the young lad who's 70 years his senior.
So what's it about then? Is it about counting your blessings, as you might have been told
a little
many
bit.
Years ago?
Although I think, unlike so many kids' films, particularly these days, have an environmental message or something, I think this is just about a storytelling and character and a beautiful, beautifully made images, which, forget about watching it in 3D, doesn't matter if you see it in 3D or not, they are beautiful anyway. And it being a very strange, peculiar, but for me, astonishingly enjoyable and entertaining film. I mean, this is the second highest grossing Pixar film ever in America already. So it's been released in America about 6 months ago. I've had to wait a long time for it. And I think the reason why it's done so well is for word of mouth. People go and see it. It's weird. It's bizarre. The premise is odd. And it gets odder. But it's so fabulously enjoyable and totally unpredictable. And I think, you know, I know a lot of people, I mean, Dr. K often thinks that some Pixar films are overrated, and I agree with that. For me, this is one that isn't overrated. I don't think it's as good as WALL-E, so I think if you have WALL-E, probably I think is the best. But for me, it's a close second. I think it is a fabulously enjoyable film and beautiful.
And do you think parents or just adults will enjoy it more? Nigel's suggesting that maybe kids are going to struggle.
Well, I've seen it twice. So I saw it once not in 3D with adults in an evening screening, and I saw it another time with kids in the morning screening. And I have to say, some kids did cry after the first 10 minutes when there is death, and it's sad. And some kids cried, and some left. So I think for young kids, it is problematic. Yeah.
But you see, the crucial thing here is that's the thing that Pixar understand, and they often quote the Walt Disney dictum, you know, that for every laugh, there should be a tear. It's no good just having wacky comedy, yes. And that's partly the problem with a lot of those other animated features. They, like Ice Age or something like that, they just slap it all up there. It's slapstick for an hour and a half or longer, but there's no kind of heart to it. And just to come back to the thing about, is there a sort of life lesson? Yes, there is. But as always with Pixar, it's all sort of threaded through the story. Yeah. They're not kind of picking it out and putting signboards up and saying, here's a billboard in 6-foot-high letters, please take note of this. It's all just threaded through the story.
Toby Young made an interesting comment when he did his review in The Times. He said that what's interesting about it is that it's about disillusionment, but disillusionment is being presented as something that is emotionally mature rather than a sign of failure. I mean, would you go along with that?
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely true, because there is that sense in which he's always had this mythical idea of this place. When he gets to the place, of course, he's very happy to be there, but he realises that he's missed stuff. You know, there's little things that that passed him by in his life before that. And so he comes to realise that, yeah, you know, maybe I should have just paid a little more attention to the little things.
And we haven't mentioned the villain, the character who's voiced by Christopher Plummer brilliantly, who's basically he's gone completely demented by thinking that he can do anything he wants, that he's rich and wealthy and powerful and can do absolutely anything he wants. That if there is a life, it's actually that he can't. I would also say one other thing, that it's the humour of it is very, it's kind of, it's funny, but it's not forced. I think that's a very kind of difficult thing to achieve in this kind of film. I do think there's something very special about it.
This email from Samir, I saw up on a preview screening, there is a 10-minute montage which is heartbreakingly beautiful. The scene doesn't need dialogue, and the music works to convey all the feeling that you need. After that, it goes to a normal animation story that doesn't entertain as much, but that scene shows all the good things about Pixar. In that respect, you mentioned Wall-E, yeah. Boyd. Is the opening section, yes, a bit like Wall-E, because there's no words there either?
That is a bit similar, yeah. Well, similarly ambitious, beautiful storytelling. I think most people will. People came away from the first chunk of Wall-E thinking this is incredible how there is no dialogue, it's beautiful, and people come away from this film thinking it's incredible there is dialogue in the first 10 minutes, but it's storytelling beautifully done. And perhaps the rest of the film isn't as special as that, but it's still phenomenal in my opinion.
If you've just joined us for the usual Friday afternoon a movie conversation, Mark isn't here because he has swine flu. He's still on email, so he's still available, and we should certainly still, in fact, Nigel Floyd just reminded me he hadn't said hello to Jason Isaacs, and I think just because the doctor's sick doesn't mean that these customs shouldn't be upheld.
Absolutely. I'd like to say hello to Jason Isaacs, who I have interviewed on several occasions, and a jolly good chap.
He is quite a charmer, isn't he?
He is.
So hello to Jason and to Dave Morrissey, who Paddy Considine was talking about earlier. He's going to be on the programme next week. His directorial debut is premiered at the London Film Festival. And Stephen Fry, Michael Sheen and Fairfield Convention have already had a mention. So, Zombieland is taking a lot of the posters. Boyd.
Yes. I sat next to David Morrissey in Awards thing. He is truly one of the nicest men
what
in the world.
What did you sit next to him for?
At Book Awards, where he was with his lovely wife, who'd written an award-winning book.
Esther Freud.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we all saying that you
I'm
love
saying
him.
I know him, Dave, as well.
You love him.
I know
just
Morrissey
as
well, absolutely. Yeah,
well, look, if Mark's not better, and there's, so, you know, swine flu, it takes you out for quite a while, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So we might be doing this time next week, and Dave Morrissey will be here, and you can
I'm available. Yeah. Not that I want the swine flu to carry on. I'm not saying I do want Dr. K to get better.
Yes.
Let me make that crystal clear.
Thank you.
Talking of pandemics, global pandemics, Zombieland.
Nicely worked.
Thanks.
Boyd.
It's a link. That was a link. Zombieland is pretty. The premise is there's been a global pandemic of some kind of virus that's turned the whole planet, more or less, population into zombies, apart from a handful of people, who include a very sweet young kind of teen dude, played by Jesse Eisenberg, who's the guy who looks a lot like Michael Cera, who's the guy who's in Superbad and Juno. And this guy wasn't in either of those films, but was in the recent Adventureland, just to confuse you. Films with land in the title.
Yes.
Jesse Eisenberg is in. He meets up with Woody Harrelson, who's a gun-toting dude.
Again.
And Woody Harrelson's pretty much his only motivation in life are killing zombies and trying to find a Twinkie. Do you know what a Twinkie is?
Well, I've heard it used in a number of ways.
Well, the food stuff.
Sausage?
No.
A chocolate bar?
No. Close. In Twinkie,
candy bar?
In the United States, Twinkies are iconic little things because they are the ultimate junk food. They're little sponge bars with cream in the middle, and they last for years and years and years because of the way they're produced. So they're kind of like, they're really unhealthy. And as we're about to hear in this clip, Woody Harrelson's obsessed with them. Let's hear the clip.
What are you, prospecting? You are a dangerous man. You're going to risk our lives for a Twinkie?
There's a box of Twinkies in that grocery store. Not just any box of Twinkies. The last box of Twinkies that anyone will enjoy in the whole universe. Believe it or not, Twinkies have an expiration date. Someday, very soon, life's little Twinkie gauge is gonna go empty. Time to nut up or shut up.
Have we got an equivalent of
Twinkies? Think of Twinkies. Have we got an equivalent?
I don't think there's anything quite that disgusting in English confectionery, actually. No. Yes. I think we should pass on.
Yeah, like a wagon wheel, but wagon wheels probably are slightly healthier, slightly more real than Twinkies. Twinkies, there's something completely unreal about them.
Mm. You mean there's no natural goodness?
There's absolutely no sustenance in them whatsoever of any kind.
No.
They do get mentioned a lot in American films, actually, don't they? This isn't the only one, but they have a particular presence in Zombieland.
They do. And the curious thing is that Woody Harrelson's quest for the last Twinkie on Earth is not unlike the quest of the main character in Up, who is looking for something, you know, mythical, which is beyond his grasp, as it were. And the teenage boy that he's teamed up with in order to survive this zombie apocalypse, played by Jesse Eisenberg, is trying to get him to, wait for it, appreciate the little things. Take time out to see that there are little things that are passing him by. In the meantime, of course, they've killed an enormous number of zombies in a large number of highly imaginative ways. There are some terrific stunts, and they have.
Aren't they dead already?
Well, they're sort of dead, but they're living dead. That's a trick, Leds. You see what they did there?
Yeah,
living dead.
But do you actually kill zombies? I mean,
you have to shoot them in the brain.
Yeah, I know you have to shoot them in the brain, but if they're dead, is killing the correct term? What do you do to a zombie to make it stop being a zombie?
I'm not sure we can get that philosophical at 4:20 in the afternoon.
Sure,
can we?
We should say these are fast zombies as well, as opposed to slow zombies. So these are ones like
Danny Boyle zombies.
Like Danny Boyle zombies and Dawn of the Dead remake zombies, rather than slow, traditional walking zombies.
Yes. One of the worrying things about the notes for this film is that the director, Ruben Fleischer, said that before he started making this film, he had only seen one horror film, or one zombie film specifically, which was Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later.
Which they're not really zombies, but...
No, they are the infected, aren't they? And this, similarly, is more of a virus movie. But he's not actually really interested in the zombies.
That's
the movie he wants to make is Midnight Run with zombies. It's actually a mismatched buddy movie, because Woody Harrelson and this teenage kid hate each other, but they're forced to kind of get through this zombie land together and to fight alongside each other. But basically, they don't get on. They spend the whole time bickering and arguing. So they're a bit like the two characters in Midnight Run, who spend the whole movie bickering and arguing. And that's really what he's interested in. They also meet up with a couple of girls, a teenage girl and her 12-year-old sister, who's played by Abigail Breslin from Little Miss Sunshine. And they turn out to be sort of a lot sort of quicker and more adept at this job than the two boys. And then they keep teaming up with them and splitting up with them, and then there's a potential romance. But really what he's interested in is the kind of character stuff. And then for no reason at all, Bill Murray turns up as a zombie, but not really.
Don't give it away. Please don't give it away. I think I was going to ask, should we give away the Bill Murray element? Because the Bill Murray element is truly demented. But I think fabulously demented. It's a complete left turn.
It's the Bill Murray surprise bit.
Bill Murray surprise that we've semi-spoiled. But we haven't spoiled, because the joy of it, for me, is what happens. But we'll just say, yeah, Bill Murray makes an astonishing appearance in this film. It isn't, I think, it's interesting, I didn't know that thing about that he hadn't seen any zombie films, because it's not in the remotest bit scary, this film, is it? It's less scary than Shaun of the Dead, you know, a zombie comedy, the brilliant zombie comedy from Edgar Wright and those people. This isn't the remotest bit. In fact, there are scenes where when a zombie's chasing someone and the tension is being built up, suddenly it cuts to the zombie's point of view, almost to undercut the tension deliberately. It's almost like he doesn't want to make a scary horror film. He wants to make a funny film, a funny, engaging, warm buddy movie, as you say, that happens to have loads of zombies in it. And actually, the other thing I noticed is that in the beginning, there are loads and loads of really gory killings of zombies, killings in inverted commas, whether we call them killings. And then actually, after that, there are long stretches where there's no gory, violent zombie attacks at all.
Hmm.
And in fact, it's just funny and engaging, a warm film. And which for me was fantastic.
Is it funny?
Yes.
It's funny in places, but not because of the horror. That's the funny thing. It's not like in, you know, a proper horror comedy where the comedy arises out of the horror. The comedy is just sort of incidental. Like, there's a discussion between Woody Harrelson and Abigail Breslin, who, being 12 years old, has no idea who Willie Nelson is. And you get that bit because he's playing that on the music system in the truck. And then later on, there's an absurd conversation that just comes out of nowhere where Abigail Breslin is trying to explain who Hannah Montana is and how she's only famous when she's wearing the wig, which is slightly passing by Woody Harrelson, who who's more interested in killing zombies.
I think it's funnier than most straight comedies that you get. You know, it's one of the funniest films I've seen this year, I think.
Kieran Norby says, I'm not a huge fan of horror movies. They normally slip by unnoticed, so my review may well not be as informed as the good doctors, mind you. He's not here, so you can say what you want. I would approach this as a fan of comedy. All in all, I had a lot of fun. It scored well, having reached a good 4 laughs, 9 titters and 3 smirks. I like the attempt to break the fourth wall with the use of the rules being written across the screen and broken in different ways. Further, the cameo by that particular legend of an actor who had better remain unnamed for fear of spoilers.
Too late. Sorry.
Was truly inspired. A joy, in fact. I would like to try and change the name of this genre, however. My friend Mick told me that this genre is called Zomcom, but I would prefer Zomedy.
Zomedy's good. To defend,
is Zomedy better than Zomcom?
I like Zomedy.
Do you?
Yeah, Zomcom's a bit... I hate Romcom, though.
Zomedy's okay, except that, as I pointed out, it isn't really, you know, a horror comedy. It's a comedy what happens to have zombies in it.
To defend Nigel giving away that thing, most of the
American Bill Murray reviews, surprise ending.
The Bill Murray surprise ending. Most of the American reviews have mentioned that Bill does appear in this film. Roger Ebert, who's for me one of the great, if he hasn't mentioned something in review, then that generally I won't mention it. He mentions it, so I think we're allowed to mention it.
And most of the reviews that came out today all mentioned the Bill Murray surprise. Martin on this email, Simon, Officer Powell was buying Twinkies in the shop when he got the call about the attack on the tower in Die Hard.
Yes.
One of the references. It's 85058 mayo@bbc.co.uk. Brian, with no tertiary education, he says, I saw Zombieland on Wednesday, really enjoyed it. Lots of laughs and tons of gore for the non-squeamish. The rules and their explanations are brilliant, and Bill Murray's cameo is hilarious.
Sorry. Yes. We should say, just explain these rules.
Yeah, that, just explain that.
Yeah, so the Jesse Eisenberg's character has a list, like, in his head, of things you mustn't do to make sure you don't get killed by a zombie. And those come up on screen, literally written out and animated, and they're very cleverly done. It's kind of gimmicky. At first you think, oh no, it's a bit annoying, but actually it does contribute to the general wackiness and unpredictability of the film, I think. Wackiness in a good way.
Yeah, and anyone who's interested in that kind of thing, how to survive, just in case there is a zombie attack, there is a very, very good book called The Zombie Survival Guide, written by Mel Brooks' son, Max Brooks, who I interviewed at the time that the book came out. And it's a very, very good guide to how to stay alive in Zombieland.
Serious book.
It's all in there. He's seen every zombie film ever made, and he has constructed an entire ethos and guidebook and survival guide just in case it
happens.
What's
the most important thing?
I think the most important thing, he seems to think, beware of bathrooms, what Americans call bathrooms. Yeah. Apparently they're always in bathrooms and you're in a vulnerable moment, as it were. You don't want to be in there if there are any zombies around.
Cardio is very important as well. Just cardio.
Right, so Zombieland is out this week. Up, we've already done. What happens next? Are we heading towards Jennifer Aniston land?
Inevitably we are, yes.
Okay, all right. So we'll do Love Happens in just a moment. More of your correspondence as well. Dear Swine Flu Triplets, Zombieland is not funny, and the lead character is not very interesting. It's like Kingpin, but without the laughs, and everyone else in the cinema, I have to say, did find it funny. But I disagree with both of you, says Mr. Gibbons. Best Twinkie in a film, the metaphorical one, 35 feet long, weighing 600 pounds in Ghostbusters. Bill Murray's in that. Chris in Manchester, famous Twinkie scene in the aforementioned Wall-E, because Wall-E's cockroach friend eats one of the last remaining Twinkies hundreds of years into the future. Emma says, I went to watch Up. I thought it was really good. The beginning was very touching. The rest was very funny, which I think can appeal to every age. Also, I don't think there is any need to have it in 3D because it's good enough without and won't affect the quality of the film. Matt on this text, boy, does sound, you know, a bit like the good doctor. All he needs to do is describe a few things as perfectly fine and call someone else in the studio your man there, and latecomers may not know the difference. Thank you, Matt.
I don't do impressions, but I do, you know, Woody Allen is my hero, and Mark's impersonation of Woody Allen is one of, I think, his finest, actually. It's a recent addition to the canon.
It's the only one that approximates to the original.
But I'm not going to do any personal.
Neil in Liverpool, I'd like an explanation as to what exactly is great about the invention of lying. As a huge Ricky Gervais fan, I saw it last night and was disappointed by the lazy, unimaginative script and cheap gags. The only thing of merit was Gervais's moving hospital bedside performance. The rest of it I spent consoling myself, trying to find
the coffee ones in my bag of revels. Interestingly, in a bag of revels, I'd avoid the coffee ones.
Oh, completely, yeah.
Because they're just horrible. All the others are fine. Yeah. So, Neil, that would be fine. We should go out. Then that would share a bag of revels. So what is funny about... specifically to Neil, who didn't find anything funny.
The establishment of the world where everyone tells the truth. The Coke and Pepsi ads, well, I would say. All the establishment of the rules in the first hour of that... first 45 minutes to 60 minutes of that film is very, very funny. And the scene where Ricky's character... reveal was via tablets printed on pizza cartons the rules of this religion that's created is also very funny. After that, I would agree it's not so funny. But I think the first half of that film is solidly funny.
Nigel, anything else to the question? What's funny?
Well, I love Woody Harrelson. I'd watch him in anything. And basically, this is just a riff on his performance in Natural Born Killers, but with zombies.
What, Ricky Gervais?
No, sorry.
Nigel hasn't seen the Ricky Gervais film. It's difficult to keep track when there's two of us.
Yeah, yeah.
Reviewers who still. Talk about films they haven't seen.
There are.
One of them works for this radio
station.
So this from... look at this. Dear all, thrilled as I am to hear that Floyd and Boyd are both able and available to fill my slot for the foreseeable future, I would like to say, in the words of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, I'm feeling better. Really, much better. So I'll be back.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we approach that moment where we have to talk about Love Happens. This is the new Jennifer Aniston film. Boyd, you haven't seen it.
No, and there's no clip. We couldn't be bothered to get a clip.
However, much to our
dedicated
surprise,
I dashed here hot foot from the Odeon West End where I saw the film this very day.
How much did it cost?
£9.50, I think. Ooh. I'll be claiming it back, obviously.
Okay.
Some people here may have seen Aaron Eckhart in a terrific movie called Thank You for Smoking, in which he played an advocate for the tobacco industry and was a thoroughly loathsome person. Bizarrely, in Love Happens, he seems to be atoning for his sins, because in this he's also a guru. In this case, he's a guru of the feelings. Now, it's a shame that Mark isn't here, actually, to do his Forrest Gump impersonation, because very early in this film, and this is really all you need to know about this movie, he says the words... Life sometimes gives you lemons. You can either make a sour face or you can make lemonade. Pretty much is the entire movie.
We've had an impersonation.
That's right.
Mark doing Forrest Gump, right. Because obviously he's not very good at it, and neither am I, as you can tell. And it goes on from there. Basically, the guy, his wife died 3 years ago. He wrote a book in order to kind of write himself out of the sadness and get through the grief. Unexpectedly, it became a huge hit. He's now on the circuit as a kind of self-help guru, helping people to face up to the pain and get themselves through the grief. But the key to that, of course, is that he has a soft center. And he isn't facing up to the death of his wife. He didn't go to her funeral. He doesn't talk to the in-laws anymore. He didn't, crucially, set free the pet parrot that he swore to her if anything ever happened to her, he would set it free. It's a tragedy. What can I tell you?
It's a comedy about grief counselling. Isn't it?
It is pretty much that. And they do actually say at one point in the notes there, we wanted to show some of the lighter sides of the existential aspects of grief. I'm not altogether sure what the lighter sides of the existential aspects of grief are. Apparently, was an attempt to address them.
Okay. Well, maybe there are some, but maybe we need other people to tell us.
Jennifer Aniston is your woman, you see, because she... curiously enough, is a florist. And she has a habit of going around in hotels and moving the picture slightly and writing strange words behind them, because she's a little bit kooky. And
that's not a good word. It always makes Mark go absolutely
I know,
mad.
But she is, in inverted commas, kooky. And he falls for her, of course, and she draws him out. And he begins to realise the error of his ways. And despite the fact that it's still very hard for him to express his feelings and say what he really feels, eventually, of course, he does, and it's indescribably tedious.
A lot of people, a lot of different companies, a lot of different actors, they're trying to come up with a huge romantic comedy.
They've got to stop.
Hit.
Yes, they've got to stop. This has already flopped in America. I think actually finally the big Hollywood studios are realising that getting kind of semi-big stars like Jennifer Aniston, giving them a very formulaic kind of vehicle like this, generally actually doesn't work, by and large. It rarely works. The Proposal worked this year with Sandra Bullock, made a lot of money. But by and large these days, they kind of don't do that well. So please just stop making them. It's pointless.
Yeah.
Arnie in Bath. Dear Floyd, Boyd and Droid, I remember seeing a film called Derailed with Aniston, oh, yes. Clive Owen, yes. and Vincent the Frenchman. And I thought it was very understated and perfectly fine and a good performance.
At least it wasn't a romantic comedy, which was in its favour, for sure.
Now, we're keeping an eye on events in Washington. President Obama's going to be giving his reaction to the news. He's been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. It may well happen in the next couple of minutes. May well happen during the 4 o'clock news. May well happen at the start of the mighty drive. But either which way, we'll bring it to you. So before we run out of time, movie of the week. Hopefully we'll still have time to do...
We haven't done Le Donc.
We haven't done Le Donc. Okay, let's do Le Donc.
Because you've had Paddy on.
We've had Paddy on.
Who explained the whole thing. 5 days, filmed in 5 days, mm-hmm. 50 grand. Very cheap. I think it's... A lot of the reviews have gone on about it's so short, it's only 70 minutes long, it's so cheap. It's, you know, not ambitious, of course not. But actually, it's an incredibly engaging, funny film. And moving, and it has so much in it that's good. I think the fact that it's only 70 minutes long is a brilliant thing. And I thought it was absolutely wonderful film.
I would agree with Boyd on the 70 minutes. It, in fact, runs, strictly speaking, about 66, and then they just tag a bit on. And there is an outtake that you should stay for at the end. I mean,
yes.
Just to get your money's worth, you should stay anyway, because it's only 78 minutes, including the credits. And there are some songs. To me, it was like an anecdote, really. It was kind of funny, and you could see that they had a lot of good times making it. Paddy Considine is just a guy who can improvise brilliantly, and I kind of liked all that. But there are lots of scenes where you see Shane Meadows as the director in the shot, which seemed to me quite odd. And yeah, I started to get sort of a bit confused about whether we were watching Paddy Considine trying to be as horrible as he could, being a real character. And then every now and then, they would start sort of riffing off each other, Shane Meadows and Paddy Considine, the way they would in real life. So there was no real distance between, like, is this the character? Are we in a mockumentary? Is he meant to be real? Is the guy who's doing the filming meant to be
I thought that
character?
Was fine, because there are, you know, there are loads of documentaries where the documentary maker inserts himself into the film, and I thought that was a kind of a comment on that. That's the way I saw it, and I thought that was absolutely fine. And just a very, again, funny than most films.
And
that
very
cost
interesting.
A million times more.
I think that Paddy Considine is making it very clear that this character came before Saxondale.
Yeah, there are similarities, but much more horrible than Saxondale. Saxondale's essentially a nice guy with an anger problem.
So we're out of time. So we can do this as a democratic vote then, if you like. Movie of the week, Boyd?
Well, it's a very good week, I have to say, but Up is top for me.
Unquestionably. Uplifting.
Up gets the movie of the week. Floyd and Boyd, the beginning of a beautiful friendship. Thanks very much indeed for stepping in.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.